Welcome to the Folktale Project. This is Dan Shawls. Today, we're concluding the story of our son. It's been quite a journey for the past few weeks, and I'm a little sad to see it go, although I will say honestly, I do love this conclusion. There's a lot here, and, well, I do hope you enjoy it. If you haven't been keeping up to date with the story of our son, I could recap it, but really, we're 12 episodes deep. I would head back a little bit and start from the beginning. It is well worth it. This is one of those stories that should be made into a film at some point. Absolutely. This is the conclusion of the story of our son, The Recompense. Prince Marvelous looked at Violet and sighed heavily. Violet gazed at the prince and smiled sweetly.
"How handsome you are, my dear cousin. I am so happy to have it in my power to restore you your beauty. And now I will pour some of this perfumed oil upon my hand. Since I cannot please your eye, I will at least embalm you,"
she said, laughing. She uncorked the vial and entreated Marvelous to sprinkle some drops on her forehead and cheeks. The heart of the prince was too full for words. He took the vial and obeyed the order of his cousin. Their surprise and joy were indescribable on seeing that as soon as the oil touched Violet's forehead, the hair disappeared, and her skin resumed its original purity and dazzling whiteness. The prince and Violet, on seeing the virtue of this wonderful oil, uttered loud cries of delight and ran towards the stable where they saw Aniela and Passrose. They called their attention to the happy effect of this perfumed oil given them by the fairy. Both joined in their happiness. The prince could scarcely believe the evidence of his senses, and now nothing could prevent his union with Violet, so good, so devoted, so tender, so lovely, so well constituted to make him supremely happy. The queen thought of the morrow, of her return to her kingdom which she had abandoned 20 years ago. She wished that she herself, that Violet, that her son the prince had clothing worthy of so great an occasion, but alas, she had neither the time nor the means to procure them. They would therefore be compelled to wear their coarse clothing, and thus show themselves to their people. Violet and Marvelous laughed at this distress of their mother.
"Do not you think, Mamma," said Violet, "that our dear prince is sufficiently adorned with his rare beauty, and that a rich and royal robe would not make him more beautiful or more amiable?"
"And do you not agree with me, my dear mother," said Marvelous, "in thinking that our dear Violet is lovely enough in the simplest clothing, that the luster of her eyes surpasses the most brilliant diamonds, that the clear whiteness of her teeth rivals successfully the rarest pearls, and that the richness of her blonde hair surpasses a crown of brilliants?"
"Yes, yes, my children," replied Aniela. "Without doubt, you are both of you handsome and attractive, but a rich dress spoils nothing, not even beauty. Jewels, embroidery, and heavy brocades would detract nothing from your charms. And I, who am old, but not ugly, madam," interrupted Passrose hastily, "you are still amiable and handsome in spite of your little country cap, your skirts of coarse striped cloth, your waist of red camlet, and your stomacher of simple cloth. Besides, when you return to your kingdom, you can buy every kind of dress your heart desires."
The evening passed away gaily, and there seemed no anxiety about the future. The fairy had provided their supper. They passed the night on the bundles of hay in the stable, and as they were all fatigued by the emotions of the day, they slept profoundly. The sun had been shining a long time, and the fairy Drolette was with them before they awoke. A soft hem-hem of the fairy aroused them. The prince was the first to open his eyes. He threw himself on his knees before the fairy and thanked her with such warmth and gratitude that her heart was touched. Violet was on her knees by his side and joining her thanks to those of the prince.
"I do not doubt your gratitude, dear children," said the fairy, "but I have much to do. I am expected in the kingdom of the King Benin, where I am to attend the birth of the third son of the Princess Blondine. This prince is to be the husband of your first daughter, Prince Marvelous, and I am resolved to endow him with all the qualities which will obtain for him the warm love of your daughter. And now, I must conduct you to your kingdom. I will return in time to be present at your wedding. Queen, she continued, turning to Ami, who was now just opening her eyes, we are about to set out immediately for your son's kingdom. Are you and your faithful Passrose ready for the journey?
Madam, replied the queen with a slight embarrassment, we are ready to follow, but will you not blush for our dress, so little worthy of our rank?
It is not I who will blush, queen, said the fairy, smiling, but rather yourself, who have this sensation of shame, but I will remedy this evil also.
Saying this, she described a circle with her wand above the head of the queen, who in the same moment found herself clothed in a robe of gold brocade. Upon her head was a hat with splendid plumes fastened with a band of superb diamonds, and her boots were of velvet spangled in gold. Amy looked at her robe with an air of complacence.
And Violet, and my son the prince, will you not extend your goodness to them also?
Violet and the prince have asked for nothing. I will do as they wish. Speak, Violet, do you desire to change your costume?
Madam,
replied Violet, casting down her sweet eyes and blushing,
I have been sufficiently happy in this robe of simple cloth. In this costume, my brother knew me and loved me. Permit me to continue to wear it as far as regard for my station allows, and allow me to preserve it always in remembrance of the happy years of my childhood.
The prince thanked Violet for these sweet words and pressed her hand tenderly. The fairy kindly nodded her approval and called for her chariot, which was waiting a few steps from them. She entered and placed the queen next herself, then the prince, Violet, and Passrose. In less than an hour, the larks had flown over the 3,000 leagues which separated them from the kingdom of Prince Marvelous. All his court and all his subjects, apprised beforehand by the fairy, expected them. The streets and the palaces were filled by the eager, happy crowd. When the chariot appeared in sight, the people uttered cries of joy, which were redoubled when it drew up before the great entrance of the palace, when they saw descend Queen Ami, a little older, no doubt, but still pretty and gracious, and the Prince Marvelous, whose natural beauty and grace were enhanced by the splendor of his clothing, glittering with gold and precious stones, which were also a present from the fairy. But the acclamations rose to a frenzy when the prince, taking Violet by the hand, presented her to the people. Her sweet, attractive countenance, her superb and elegant form were adorned with a dress which the fairy had clothed her by one stroke of her wand. Her robe was of gold lace, while her waist, her arms, and shoulders shone with the innumerable larks formed of diamonds larger than hummingbirds. On her graceful head, she wore a crown of larks made of precious stones of all colors. Her countenance, soft but gay, her grace, her beauty, won the hearts of all. For a long time, nothing was heard but shouts of, Long live King Marvelous! Long live Queen Violet! The noise and tumult were so great that many persons became deaf. The good fairy, who desired that only joy and happiness should prevail throughout the kingdom on this auspicious day, cured them instantly at the request of Violet. There was a magnificent feast spread for the court and the people. 1,346,822 persons dined at the expense of the fairy, and each guest was permitted to carry away enough for 8 days. During the repast, the fairy set off for the kingdom of King Benin, promising to return in time for the wedding of Marvelous and Violet. During the 8 days of the fairy's absence, Marvelous, who saw that his mother was a little sad at not being queen, entreated her earnestly to accept Violet's kingdom, and she consented to reign there, on condition that King Marvelous and Queen Violet would come every year and pass 3 months with her. Queen Ami, before parting with her children, wished to witness their marriage. The fairy Drolette and many other fairies of her acquaintance and many genii were invited to the marriage. They all received the most magnificent presents and were so satisfied with the welcome given them by King Marvelous and Queen Violet that they graciously promised to return whenever they were invited. 2 years afterward, they received an invitation to be present at the birth of the first child of King Marvelous. There came to Queen Violet a daughter, who, like her mother, was a marvel of goodness and beauty. The king and queen could not fulfill the promise they had made to Queen Ami. One of the genii who had been invited to the wedding of Marvelous and Violet found in Queen Ami so much of goodness, sweetness, and beauty that he loved her. And visiting her several times in her new kingdom and being affectionately and graciously received by her, he carried her off one day in a whirlwind. Queen Ami wept for a while, but as she loved the genius, she was not inconsolable. Indeed, she promptly consented to wed him. The king of the genii granted to her as a wedding present the power of participating in all the privileges of her husband, never to die, never to grow old, and the ability to transport herself in the twinkling of an eye wherever she wished to go. Ami used this power very often to visit her son and his children. King Marvelous and Queen Violet had 8 sons and 4 daughters, and they were all charming. They were happy without doubt, for they loved each other tenderly, and their grandmother, who, it was said, spoiled them a little, induced their grandfather, the genius Bienveillant, to contribute all in his power to their happiness. Consequently, they received many rich gifts. Passerose, who was warmly attached to Queen Ami, had followed her into her new kingdom, but when the genius carried her off in a whirlwind, Passerose, seeing herself forgotten and not being able to follow her mistress, was so sad that, in the loneliness caused by the departure of Ami, she prayed the fairy Drolette to transport her to the kingdom of King Marvelous and Queen Violet. She remained with them and took care of their children, to whom she often recounted the adventures of our son and Violet. She still remains, it is said, though the genius and his queen have made her many excuses for not having carried her off in the whirlwind.
"No, no,"
Passerose replied to all these explanations. "Let us remain as we are. You forgot me once, you might forget me another time. Here, my dear Arsun and my sweet Violet never forget their old nurse. I love them, and I will remain with them. They love me, and they will take care of me." The farmer, the superintendent, and the master of the forge who had been so cruel to Arsun were severely punished by the fairy Drolette. The farmer was devoured by a bear some hours after he had chased away Arsun. The superintendent was dismissed by his master for having let loose the dogs who escaped and could never be found. The same night, he was bitten by a venomous serpent and expired some moments afterwards. The master of the forge, having reprimanded his workmen too brutally, they resolved upon vengeance. They seized him and cast him into the blazing furnace, where he perished miserably. And that is the conclusion of both the old French fairy tale of Arsun and of, well, old French fairy tales by Countess Sophie de Ségur. It's really a lovely ending, except for the, well, kind of unnecessary punishment of the farmer, the superintendent, and the master of the forge. It really is a wonderful ending. Everybody gets a joy and a happiness. It links back to the earlier story of Princess Blondine, one of my absolute favorites in this collection. And it just, all in all, it seems like a wonderful way to end the tale. And if I was to turn this into a film, I would probably end it on the words of Passerose, that they loved me and they will take care of me. I really hope that you have all enjoyed this series. We're going to round out the rest of the week with a few shorter and, well, a bit sillier French tales from Jean de La Fontaine. Before we head in next week with, well, we're heading back to America and going to go back into rutabaga stories. This is Dan Scholes with the Folktale Project. Don't forget that you can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Overcast, anywhere you like to get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Folktale Project. You can find us on Auto Radio, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Spotify, anywhere you like to listen. and you can always head over to folktaleproject.com, where you'll find a new story waiting for you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. As always, thank you so much for listening.